So I'm Simon Jackson, this is my colleague Des Muscat. We're both from Tully House Museum, which is all the way up north in Carlisle. Whereas I'm looking after the natural science collections, Debs is the manager of the Cumbria Biodiversity Data Centre. And we're very fortunate because our record centre is actually an integral part of the museum. And because we have the collections and we have the records, we have a very varied way of using a combination of indoor and outdoor activities to communicate taxonomy. So I'm going to talk a bit about the museum collections first, and then Debs is going to talk about using the records centre. Right, okay. So a bit about the museum collection. We've got 300,000 specimens. The vast majority are insect specimens in our entomology collection, but we have all the other disciplines too as well. We have a good collection of zoology, taxidermy, mycology, large collection of botanical specimens, and also geology too as well. And at the Record Centre, we have 2.2 million records, it's always growing, with 20,000 different species. And the real strength of the collection is its focus on Cumbrian biodiversity, because it shows how this exceptional biodiversity changes over 200 years. So as a result, it's an essential academic research resource, and also a resource for local and planet. Debs will talk a lot about recording with local specialists. We have young people coordinators that come in and do work. Last week we were engaging people with whale bones, and we'll come to whale bones later. Work with vulnerable adults, school children, a lot of sessions in-house. We have a family coordinator working with schools, and we've recently started to work with universities too as well. So that's something that we're beginning to develop. Now, because we have all this varied audience, with all these different ages and levels of background experience, we need to have a varied approach to communicating taxonomy. We need to do it in a different way. So we've tried to frame, in this rather formal-looking thing called an engagement matrix, but that name doesn't matter. But the important thing is that this sort of structure will frame our talk today. And basically what it does is that it crudely subdivides the work of the museum into indoor and the work of the Record Centre as outdoor sort of biological surveying techniques. And it's helpful to think of our communication of taxonomy as several different levels. So we might communicate things to do with biodiversity, the broad range of different groups that are present, to younger children, for instance. And we're doing this through our current Eden River exhibition, and Debs will talk about fun activities in our lovely gardens at Tully House, so we're making the most of our gardens. With a bit more formality, we start to talk about hierarchical classification, how things are grouped within larger groups. And we do this through our collections tour. So we try and make a behind-the-scenes thing into something which is educational. And Debs will talk about bioblitzes as well. And with a bit more formality, we try and make things relevant in the national curriculum around classification, relevant to schools. And we start to introduce biological recorders to classifying things at higher taxonomic levels. And then with university students, we can really start introducing phylogeny, systematics, and we can start training people in how to identify things to species level. So that's really the framework. So let's start off with biodiversity then. So every summer, we have a large exhibition at Tully House. And this year, our exhibition is Eden River. So we have, fortunately, a large art gallery packed full of material. And because our major audience is our families, a lot of our interpretation and display are based around families too. But whilst biodiversity is a large theme, I like to think so, we're also trying to educate people on our impacts on the river, such as pollution. And a score made a large litter monster as well. But we also do have a large conventional element with specimens as well. And one of the things that was involved was this biodiversity wall. It's a large wall that stretches on the side of the exhibition. So this was to select some of the key species you find on the river. But I also wanted to show a cross-section through vertebrate groups to start with, to show some of the major classes. So we've got a lot of usual suspects, including fish, amphibians, mammals, and birds. But more importantly, I wanted children to look beyond the simple, obvious vertebrates so that they look a bit more closely at what's important to ecology, including plants and insects. And if we look a bit more closer at this particular cabinet, It's packed full of specimens. We have four different herbarium sheets from our large 60,000 collection, showing a broad range of different orders. You can't really make out here, but it sort of illustrates what they are on this label here. And then we have six of the 12 insect specimens showing some of the major orders you can find, including dragonflies, caddisflies, and mayflies, to name a few. So although we're not using any formal taxonomic nomenclature, such as families and classes, we want to try and get across this idea of biodiversity and how wildlife can consist of all these different groups, which are more than just vertebrates. So, moving up the scale then, talking about that our biological collections, like many places, are arranged taxonomically in this recognised standard of classification. So it helps internally also, because it means we can find specimens according to this system. And this is one of our herbarium. We were fortunate to have this from the Lancaster University a few years ago, containing 35,000 specimens. So we have cabinets arranged into families and orders, and subdivided further still into genus and species. Another example is our entomology store, and we're fortunate enough to have many of our orders now rehoused in these fireproof cabinets, with drawers into families, and if we look into the drawer, arranged into columns of species. So whether our visitors are aware of it or not, when we take them into the stores, they're going on a journey of taxonomy. They're walking into this structured way that we try and make sense of the natural world. And if we take them on this journey, when we actually access an order, we pull out a drawer of a family, and then we look at the species. They start to understand the structure that I often compare to a Russian nesting doll. And it's also possible to work in some taxonomic terms, such as family and species, because although the younger people might understand it, the older people in the group will do. So as a result, it can be multi-layered interpretation. So I often find it, useful to make a comparison to an art collection. So this came to us from a 19th century naturalist, and you can see that the specimens are arranged concentrically. Now, obviously, this has no scientific or taxonomic value, but it is good for engaging with younger groups, as we often do, because it does give the idea of biodiversity the first point that we were trying to communicate earlier, because it shows a broad section through butterflies, moths, and also some beetles as well. So now we'll talk about classification and working with schools. And the example we have now is our fantastic new exhibit, largely thanks to funding from the Arts Council England. So this is a 12-metre whale skeleton that we've just installed at Tully House. We like to think of it as an up-and-coming centrepiece. It's already starting to inspire the local council to have a plastic-free pledge. And we're trying to use it to have as much impact as we can, and also informal teaching, because now we're integrating this into university and school teaching. So the criteria here, which are relevant to KS2 that we engage with on local schools, talk about grouping things based on observable characteristics and the reasons behind why we make those classifications. But actually, classification is also relevant to younger groups as well, and we engage a variety of different aged children. So we do this with the family coordinator there as well, because she has a lot of experience working with children, whereas I'm able to bring in some of the knowledge about the whale specimen. So when young children come to the museum, not surprisingly, a lot of them have this expectation that every large skeleton must be a dinosaur, or some form of extinct marine reptile, or even a giant shark. We've had all manner of different things. And it's somewhat surprising to tell them that it's actually a mammal, and it even tricks out some of the adults as well. Because after all, if you're not familiar, it lacks the large throat pouches and baleen. It lacks the fin, the soft tissue, and the fluke. So a key learning point is that whales are mammals, but more importantly, why are they mammals? What's those characteristics? So we often do this through a series of questions. We might group them together and say, are whales reptiles, amphibians, birds, or mammals? We might often try and exclude certain groups as well and say, well, actually, they don't have gills and they have blowholes. They still need to breathe air. And if we look really closely, I can't really sit here, they still have a pelvis.
pertaining to their ancestry some 50 million years ago. So we can work in the evolutionary context into these practicals as well. So these practicals are largely observation-based, and it's really helpful, I find, to get the children to actually do a drawing in one of the boxes that we provide them, and then they will make a note of the top three questions that they want to ask me at the end. So we also have some of the bones that we didn't mount, because we only mounted the right side, and we start off with a rib, because it's nice and easy. Children can identify that in their own bodies, and they can find it on our whale, effectively named Drigsby. But then we might move on to something more complex, such as a vertebra. We might talk about the backbone and how in a mammal it moves up and down. How a whale is effectively galloping through the ocean, and it's the same up and down motion in any mammal, whether it's a horse or even a human. And this contrasts to the side-to-side motion in a reptile and in a fish. So we're trying to relate the key features that define a whale to its broader mammalian classification. So these work quite well, these sessions work well in terms of using specimens, and we're also able to tailor this as well and use a similar format for working with families. So now that brings it to the other end of the spectrum, talking about university students. So this is something that we've recently started to work on. We're talking about the University of Cumbria. They have a new campus near Carlisle, and we're talking about new zoology courses. And the unique selling point of the museum is that we have a collection. We have real specimens, so this effectively brings to life two-dimensional studies, dissections that they might be looking at in a three-dimensional way. So they can study some of the physical characteristics that their lecturer might be telling them, but in a three-dimensional way, using a variety of different specimens. So this is a partnership between the museum and these sessions are a partnership between the museum and also the lecturer. So there are three sessions here that are particularly relevant, I think. The first one is introducing diversity classification. We talk about family trees, but in a phylogenetic context. Then we start to talk about tetrapods, and we have a variety of different specimens where we look at how the forelimb in particular has adapted. And of course, we can use the whale again here, because we can talk about the adaptation of the whale forelimb to its marine existence. And the example I'm going to talk about now is avian specializations. So each session starts with a 20-minute lecture where we introduce the evolutionary context of the group in question. And with avian specializations, the universities particularly enjoy hearing about theropod dinosaur evolution. In fact, they get rather sidetracked and have to tell them to put their phones away and not look at Jurassic Park. But they're often fascinated to learn that key avian characters that we often associate with birds now, such as the wishbone or the furcula or even feathers, were actually appeared quite early on in dinosaur evolution in a stepwise pattern. And the beauty of looking at a variety of different specimens in the practical means we can look at soft tissue features such as feathers and taxidermy. We can look at features such as the furcula in osteological specimens as we have here in this peregrine falcon. And students will start to look at and identify the key avian features at the beginning of the practical. And as you can see here, I asked them to move around the specimens, but nonetheless, they're putting them together, starting to compare this pigeon with this grey parrot here. A key part of will then be to choose a particular feature and see how it varies in the different species and relate this to its ecological niche. So there's a lot to choose from here with a grey heron, because it's obviously looking at the beak, comparing this to its predatory lifestyle, or the specialised S-shaped neck as well. And of course, you've got the grey heron here for an extra comparison. So at the end of the session, they'll then be able to feed back to us on what they've learned, like a little mini presentation. So we find these sessions work really well, and they often do lots of detailed observations in their notebook as well. And we're gradually slipping more and more taxonomic terms in throughout the development of the course. We find that many students actually start off with very little knowledge of zoology, and we're often introducing quite basic things throughout the course. So we also provide opportunities for volunteers. Some of them might be enthusiasts. So we have some botanical enthusiasts here working through our herbarium, specimen by specimen, species by species, often getting really actively involved, sometimes sidetracked by checking the taxonomic validity of certain taxa. But we also work with university students providing extracurricular activities. So working the whale in again, We 2 years ago, they helped us clean some of the specimens because it was a fresh specimen. And whilst they did that with all their health and safety kit on, they also learned a lot about whale anatomy as well and how the bones moved, and as they helped me to document it. So these are extra opportunities working with the collection. So talking about working outside and working about extra opportunities, I now pass you over to my colleague Debs, who will tell you about the Cumbria Biodiversity Data Centre.
Thank you, Simon. Yes, we're a record centre, so naming things is really important. But what's more important is naming things accurately. And we do most of our work and naming outdoors, so I was going to give you a quick review of the resources and the people that we use when we're doing that outdoors. And for the first thing is that everything that we use has to be portable, because we have to take it outside, and because it's Cumbria, it has to be weatherproof. And much as we'd like to use online and interactive things when we're out and about, most places we go outside in Cumbria do not have a signal, which on the one hand means that we're not using these valuable resources, but on the other hand, it does mean that the people that we're with are not being distracted by Facebook, YouTube, this, that, and the other. So at our very simplest, we do get to work at the museum and the Biodiversity Centre with very young children. And as Simon has said, we start simply by naming things. So here is Tom with a moth. Last week, we had some young people in a museum and we were playing animal bingo, because one of the things with small children and mini beasts and bug hunts is that you can't actually guarantee that there's going to be something there. And if it is, it's probably something that you don't know what it is, or you don't know one of your funny stories. So in this instance, because the garden was bare and very dry, we hid a series, hundreds of rubber toys. Apologies that they were not anatomically correct, but they did result in a rather fab game of animal bingo, where children were rushing out, collecting stuff and naming them and ticking the box. And when they got them all, they were got a small prize, which was a rubber insect. So, going on to mini beasts, where we spend more time, these are run usually by people who do actually know a little bit about ecology or mini beasts, or hopefully some plants as well. And the point of this is that we started saying, okay, there's a whole wide, there's this whole range of things that you can be looking at, but now we want you to start looking at things in real detail to find out what's the difference between this and that. We don't use words like classification, we don't use morphology, it's what is different, how many legs has it got, how many wings has it got, etc. And to support us in the field, we use very simple keys, yes, no answers to things, and here's a couple of examples. And we try and ensure that the people who are doing this do have a good background, because kids are fabulous at finding things that you couldn't see, so therefore they like to trick you. And also people who are familiar with the invertebrates and what you're looking at, so that they can tell the stories. And I heard somebody telling some children the other day that millipedes, when they hatch out of an egg, only have 6 legs. So if there's anyone here who can confirm that, I can use that fact, because I like that. So next up is a bio blitz, and some of you will know that this is about usually taxonomic experts surveying a local park or nature reserve to find as many species as they can in a given time, with the added bonus of the general public coming along and joining in. And to make it fun and to make sure that we get the most educational benefit out of it, there will usually be a range of activities. Now, this one in the summer included camera trapping, moth trapping, a butterfly transect, pond dipping, tarn dipping, we had a bat walk, we had a hay meadow survey going on, so there are all sorts, as well as obviously the bug hunt. So there are different ways that people could engage with both the plants and the animals of this particular site. We use taxonomic experts, because they need to be there to make sure that we get the biggest list at the end of the day. But when we do that, we're mindful of who we actually choose, because once again, we have to have those that have an engaging personality, and as we've heard this morning, they have to have those stories that hook the public in and get those get people interested. And I think David, who's in the top here, he's explaining, he's got a dragonfly, Exuvia, and he's explaining about the jaws using this Exuvia. What resources do we use? Well, we take the library, basically, to cover every eventuality. Mainly, we encourage the public to use, again, dichotomous keys, getting them to use magnifying glasses and look at things closely. We do take a lot of equipment because, unlike Simon's specimens, the ones that we're involved in, unless it's a plant, they tend to move about a bit. So we do have nets and things to trap them and pots to put them in and magnifying glasses. But we're happy to take microscopes and things into the field, and kids seem to love microscopes. So again, here we're using both common names, but we're not averse to using a little bit of taxonomy, some Latin names. Certainly the experts that we choose will be using morphological features like ligules and antennae and thallus. They're using words to explain and compare what they're finding. Once we've hooked them in and people start to get a bit interested and they keep coming back to our events, we try to entice them a bit more and entice some of the zoological students to come to start to record by running a small program of training courses. Now, these are usually held in, this one is actually, the one here is the mammal recording in the Tully House garden. But most of our work is done actually in a community hall where we can spend some more time in a classroom in the morning with a cup of tea, and then we go out and about. They're often habitat focused, so it could be plant and mammals of the salt marshes near you, or it could be butterflies or caterpillars in their food plants, or mammal identification. So there's a whole range of things, and now we're starting to not deliver it through museum personnel, but we're getting in our local experts, who are usually county recorders or somebody with equivalent experience. And now we really are starting to hone in on taxonomy, phylums, classes, orders, families. We talk about genus, we talk about subspecies, we talk about name changes that we tell them are going to trip them up, because by the time you've learned this one and remembered, it may have changed. So for this area of work, we use as many resources as we can. So there'll be field guides. There'll be stuff that we've downloaded from websites of national recording schemes and national societies. The museum has developed a series of Cumbrian things, like the Cumbrian Bird Atlas and the Moth Atlas. Or we've got pictorial and coloured guides to the crickets of Cumbria or the shield bugs of Cumbria. So we're trying to encourage these people to start accessing really good, solid information. For more practice, because nobody can do this without practice, we guide them to local history societies. And Carlisle Natural History Society has been embedded in our museum since it began. But also there are activities in our county from butterfly conservation and the ARC and the Mammal Society. So we encourage people to go out and practice their naming. And we do talk very much now and increasingly about online resources and where they can go. And the FSC Biodiversity Project website's got this fabulous little bit on it where you can find out, you put in, I don't know, insects and what resources are available around identification. And it will then come up with this great list, and it tells you whether it's free, downloadable, PDF, out of print, or how much it's going to cost you if you want to buy it from the FSC. So it's brilliant. The BRC tells people about the different recording schemes, and obviously we promote iRecord as a way of people wanting to put their records on electronically rather than on paper, as I do. And of course, when it's raining outdoors, we do like to bring them into the collection. So that, again, reinforces their learning and it reinforces their understanding of taxonomy. Another way we engage with them is to get people to use these marvellous mobile phones to take photographs, and they can send them to us and we can confirm their identification. If we can't, it'll be one of our experts who can. And again, this is something really good at reiterating that they need to look at critical features, often the ones highlighted in the key. So we don't care what quality of photograph it is, as long as the critical feature is in focus. So it could be down your microscope, and here's my appalling photography, but it works, and verifiers tell me that they can see and identify things from it. So, and another, finally, in the sunny days of the summer, we have a programme of recording days. And this is a rare opportunity for all of the experts in our county to come together. And on this slide here, I've got water beetles, hoverflies, birds, flowering plants, bryophytes, dragonflies, caddisflies, you name it, that's their expertise, and they've probably got a secondary and a tertiary expertise as well. And we encourage our trainees to join this group of people for two reasons, really. One is they will learn huge, huge amounts from being with the experts. They will be inspired because these people know stuff that I never even gonna forget, learn and forget. So they know the stories, they know all of the information, and they know stuff that's not even written in the books. But more importantly, the trainees and the up-and-comings ask questions. And recently, we had a gentleman here who's water beetles, has been recording a Geotrupes mutator in North Cumbria for quite a while now. And we were able to say to him, oh, have you got any specimens? Because we haven't really got any records in our part of the world. And he went, how can you tell if it's a mutator? And we went, count the strae in, it's really difficult. And he went, do you know what? I don't think there were correct records. However, Steve will be keeping specimens just to prove me wrong. And again, this group of people will be taxonomically correct, because one of the things at tea break is out of your pocket. I know what this used to be called, but I think it's been renamed. So there's that sort of sharing and keeping people to the top of their taxonomic and naming game. And because we've got such a reputation at the museum for naming, here is an example of Simon's Post, which we did name properly. So naming at the Tully House has been really important to us, and we've been doing it now at the Record Centre for 102 years at least. So, as Simon said, we are careful to adapt how we work with the public and how we work with the experienced. So our approach will vary depending on who we're working with, where we're working, etc. So our mini beast hunts are those that engage those and hook people in. There's no formal taxonomy, and we're just focusing on biodiversity. Then we're delivering a range of activities to support those with some knowledge who want to know a bit more, be it through the school's work and the university's work that Simon does, or the training courses that we do, increasing the level of taxonomical understanding. And finally, we're trying to create opportunities that enrich that knowledge through volunteering at the museum or coming out on our recording days. However, throughout this process, we need to make sure that people enjoy themselves and as well as learn, so that they keep coming back and spreading the word.